Okay, it's running. So we just got the beginning when we start. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على خاتم النبيين وإمام المرسلين. We continue with our tafsir of Surah Al-Baqarah. I mentioned some comments last time about Salu and Sali, about Salah, and said that the ones who claim that Salah is from Sali are mistaken. And I mentioned also the indexed Quran of Muhammad Fuad Abdul Baqi, which should maybe reprinted a little bit with a nicer organization by giving the intermediate roots in the top of every root separation, because he just put three stars there, the beginning of another root, but it's good to mention the root there. He's relying on the people, they will analyze, understand. But that's for the future, inshallah. We may suggest that, and maybe someone will re-edit it and improve on it or something like that. But also I mentioned that Qantara and Qintar, if you analyze them in Arabic terms, everyone say Qantara, which is, means a bridge, must be from the root of Qantar, Qaf Nun Tara, the same with Qintar. But I said they're definitely of various origins. They have to be, they are imported from non-Arabic language anyway, but became Arabic words. Of course, it says about if you give one woman a qintar as a dowry, you cannot take anything from it. If you take it, it is a vicious sin and ith mubin. So qintar is used in Arabic, and this comes from qintar and hundred weights. This is what you call it in English, 100 pounds, which is maybe nowadays 47 point something kilogram or something, 100 weight. And the other word, Qantara, is also from Latin. I found the following interesting things. Let me, it's originally, but in Arabic that coincided. And if someone just looks at Arabic alone, he will think they're from the same root and will wonder what has to do Qantar of that big amount of gold to do with the bridge. It has nothing to do. It's completely different roots. The root for Qantara is coming also from Latin. It's called Kinktura originally, or Sinktura, or Jinktura, or Kinkotura, or something like that, depending on how the C is pronounced. Allah knows how it was pronounced by the Roman, but we know how it's pronounced out nowadays. It is either K or C, depending on the position in English, for example, and in French. And in Turkish, it goes far away. Even they have adopted the C to be in the order A, B, C, A, B, J. So this is Jim. Yeah. Interesting, like, for example, there is a child minder called Hajar. It's written H-A-C-E-R. And everyone call here, the English people call Hesa. Reading it as a C. So that's how things could get confused. And that's actually Hajar. And she knows that he's Hajar, but she doesn't correct the people. She let him miss Hesa. So that's Hajar. So this is the current modern Turkish adoption of the C. Anyway. So the King Tura, the second calf, King Tura, the second one has been dropped because it's heavy to pronounce. So it became King Tura and became Qantara. And originally in Latin, it means either belt or hanger, clothing hanger, because it's like an arc. It's have an arc shaped, anything arc shaped. But we say, what has the belt to do that? Actually, also because belts are usually, if you hang them, they become an arc shaped. And or if you belt a horse, it will be arc shape. So it has to do with the arc shape. And obviously the bridges, the Roman built them in arc shape because of mechanical reasons. Anyone of you who have studied mechanic knows that it has to be so that the weight and the force will be distributed going all the way to the right end and beginning, the foot of the bridge and the end of the bridge. So all the pressure will be there, carried by the soil all the way to a certain depth. Anyway, so this is... So it's completely different. Where the other way is from Kintal or Sintal, and to the word cent, one of a hundred, like the American cent, etc., comes from that. So it's completely different words, but they merge together. So this could happen with other words, possibly maybe words which are like which will come to one word, like kafara. Could it be maybe a confluence of two different words from old Semitic language? We don't know. We'll see. So this is a relation about some Arabic roots. Maybe it looks like one root, really a confluence. In case of Salwa and Salia, the confluence happened in derivation, Musalli, etc. Musalli meaning the horse which comes next, touching the first one, is coming from Salaya, like touching the hellfire and so on. Who are Salah? Musalli, the one who is praying, is coming from Salawa, from Salat, with Waw. And those in the Quran is written with Waw to indicate its original. And interestingly, many scholars of Tafsir did not notice this point and thought that everything can go to the root of Salaya. It's not true. It's two different roots there. But because the final letter is essentially a vowel or a long vowel, vowels are weak. They're called huruf illa, sick letters or sick characters. They can easily change into in one another. It can be a ya can become an a or o depending upon what is behind and after. So that's the huruf illa. They are easily changeable, and then some of the derivative words may coincide, although they are from different words and completely different worlds. They have nothing to do with each other. So that's just a small remark. Those like Salawa and Salaya. I think we should not spend much more time on this one and continue with the Quran. When it says, we essentially address the Yunawina bil ghaib wa yuqimuna as-salata mimma razaqnahum yunfiqun. And we discussed a bit about rizq and so on, and that we discussed the action. We will face this problem of divine actions. I was going not to go very deep in that, but it seems to be inescapable because al-Razi, which I said is one of the best tafsir, although the Salafi do not like it, it has everything except tafsir. That's not true. It has plenty of tafsir. He opens many problems, so problem to go theology and ilm al-kalam and so on, and they are of relevance. It comes, for example, in the next one, there's another divine action mentioned that, and issues related to how Allah acts in time, etc. And it will relate again to Qadr. So we'll get us to that. We'll have to summarize that again based on that, what the Quran says about that. But it's when we get to Al-Ladina Kafaru. Then the Quran continues about these mu'mineen. Further feature is either a second category of mu'mineen. As we said, the first group is a هدى للمتقين يؤمن بالغيب وما رزقنا ويقيمون الصلاة وما رزقهم ينفقون. Some scholars said this relates to the originally those مؤمنين who were originally مشركين, Arab مشركين. These did not have غيب before that. They did not know about آخرة. They did not know about previous revelation, and they became متقين. They became Allah aware and that's the key of all goods. And the other group then says it's a separate group. والذين يؤمنون بما أنزل إليك وما أنزل من قبلك وبالآخرة هم يوقنون. Is related to those people of the book, which have they were believing in previous revelation, but now they added to the last revelation. Is a category of the people of the book. Some other scholars say no, it's related to all the believer, because it applies to all of them, even those who were originally mushrikeen, have no previous revelation. They must have come through the final revelation to believe in the final revelation. That's the meaning of iman, to believe in the final revelation, and the opposite of it is kufr. And through that, and the report of the Prophet, they know there's a previous revelation, and they believe in it in summary. So this applies to the mushrikeen. And they must be also, the most important aspect of ghayb is al-akhirah, the last days, they believe in that also. So whatever it is, either two categories of believer, Allah is praising them, or one category and the ayah is more explaining what is part of ghaib, the most essential, important part of ghaib, which is obviously mentioned in the hadith of iman, تُؤْمِنَ بِاللَّهِ وَمَلَائِكَتِهِ وَكُتُبِهِ وَرُسُلِهِ وَبِالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ وَالْقَدْرِ خَيْرِ وَشَرِّ. That's the more important aspects of ghaib, which iman is based upon, شَيْعَيْنُ وَشَرْعِ iman. But one of the most important things is that they believe that what had been revealed to you and revealed before. So this means they believe in revelation. And the revelation is usually and normally mediated by angels, initiated by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, mediated by angels. So they believe in the angels as heavenly messengers. And they believe also human messengers, in contradistinction to seculars and pagans who say, Allah did not send any messenger. This will infringe our freedom. That's the secular argument. Couldn't possibly have sent messengers. Otherwise, why did he give us eyes and a mind? By the way, this is the Brahmin point of view, that humans have their own mind. They don't need messengers. That's what they claim. That's in their philosophy. It's not the common Hindu and so on. No. But I mean the most sophisticated Brahmin philosophers and Hindu philosophers. So they are genuinely secular in that sense. So that's the most important part of ghaib, because all previous messengers are ghaib, and also that what comes to the messenger, the wahi, is ghaib. You don't perceive it, or they have no access to it, but you have all the report of the prophet, and you have the evidences of the prophethood, so you assert that by evidence, not just by taslim, as it should be. They believe in the last day. Well, akhirah is the last. Then we have the first and the last, or the near and the far. So akhir could be far, could be meaning last. The last day. Usually the translation is the last day, akhirah, the last day. Before that, the first days or the near days. So the dunya is called dunya because it's from the danaya, the dunu becomes close. The one which is close to us is dunya, and the one is far away from us or later is akhirah. And what is later is usually late, usually far away from us. What we are aware about is what is close to us is the immediate, the present. The future, even tomorrow, is akhir, relative to today. But what the akhir is meant here is that the last days, that the end of the world, the second world, the second phase of the world. Obviously, it's not that it's such a second world exists. Some physicists may say the universe will go in a hyper crunch and then they emerge again, a second world. That's not what the meaning of it is. Not that that's physically going to happen. It is that it is going to happen with whatever mechanism it is. Not necessarily by a mechanism of hyper crunch or something. No, it could be by another mechanism, by this universe expanding, and then actually al-akhirah will be relative to the people of the earth, only akhirah of us here, the humans. The earth will be changed, and then the rest of the universe will continue expanding. It's not necessary that the whole universe have to end and the new universe starts. That's not necessary, but it could be. All points of view are possible from the revelation. There's nothing in the revelation indicating that is different, indicating really a clear mechanism. Even the ayah, when we turn the heaven as we turn the book, could be sama, could meaning the whole universe, could the word sama means above us. It could be only sama ad-dunya. It could be even the atmosphere. The atmosphere may be wound around and changed. Could be local event, could be a universal event. So even that is not really, unless you read it really in a shallow way. But in a deeper meaning, is not necessary. Because sama could be mean sama ad-dunya, could be the upper atmosphere of these layers. So all of these are possibly a meaning of sama. That's one place where people get stuck and have a problem, because they interpret sama, sometimes it must be these seven heavens or these planetary, so not necessary. For example, the whole known universe is a sama dunya because it's enlightened by masabih, it's enlightened by stars. And these stars are the normal phenomena in galaxies all the way to the border of the visible universe. So this is up to the border of the visible universe, it's a sama dunya in one point of view. The seven heavens mentioned may be seven layers of the atmosphere. It has nothing to do even with the stars. So all of these things have to be seen in context and interpreted. Otherwise, you will be in trouble. Like many people, simple-minded atheists are in trouble. Instead of going to the essential core meaning, which is compulsory, that's anything above us is sama, including the various layers of atmosphere. And in every ayah, we have to see which sama is meant, really. Everyone has said about Allah, are you safe that one in heaven? You know, having one in the exaltation. The one, as human convention, is that Allah is beyond the universe, that is above, in the direction of above, in manner of exaltation. Does not relate to issue of space and time in that sense. It has to be analyzed differently than that. So all of these things has to be considered when we get there, inshallah. We'll touch on these in proper time without going too much, which will be overloading because these recording will be available for the public. But it should go deep enough to refute some of these misconceptions and some of these funny ideas going in people's minds sometimes. So that's what the akhirah is meant here, the next universe or next life is really there's a resurrection, and which obviously those who believe in the hyper crunch will not believe, because for them this hyper crunch will finish this universe completely, a new universe will emerge. There's no resurrection for him, so that their akhira is not that what is required to be believed in the Quran. Secondly, beside the resurrection that these people addressed now will be resurrected, and they will be questioned and will be accounted, and they will be either rewarded or penalized. That's the meaning of akhira. So so disregarding, is it really two categories of believers or one category of believer? Even if they originally two mentioned that each one of them is praised, ultimately they merge together after that. They join in the same by believing in the final revelation of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and this is the cornerstone of Iman. This is the opposite, is rejecting the Prophet. That's the kufr. They have all in praise, and these are the one who then the next ayah comments about them. What's the next ayah comment about them? The next ayah says, "Ulaika those ala huda min rabbihim wa ulaika hum muflihun." Those mentioned previously, being it one category or two categories, they are on a guidance from their Lord, and those are muflihun. أُولَٰئِكَ عَلَى هُدًى مِّن رَبِّهِمْ وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ. You can read that. Let us check. I didn't have opened the translation. Any one of you opening that translation site I mentioned last time, Islam Way, etc.? Let me open it. See what the various translation says. I should have opened it earlier, but I forgot about it. Let me open it now. It takes one minute. So sorry for that. Okay, it's deep buried in folders, inside folders and so on, but this is okay. Quran, recordation, and tafsir, and we can put the site here, islamawakened.com, islamawakened.com. Keep that site in mind, because it gives you quite a number of option translation, deprecated translation, things which are questionable, things which are agreed upon, which is good. It's a good reference. Then we can compare with that what we have from the Arabic tafsir and so on. Obviously, these translations try to get the gist, get as much as possible okay, so let's go to this ayah, see how they translated, and compare to the fine points of Arabic language which we okay. So we'll go to the so that's just the various translation. For example, Muhammad said, it is they who follow the guidance which comes from their sustainer, and it is they who shall attain to a happy state. That's one translation. Let's say what Spiktol says, these depend on guidance from their Lord, these are the successful. Okay, so etc. So if you have augmented in front of you, that's, I said, islamawakened.com. Quran/2/5 default HTML. This is the fifth ayah of second surah. Okay, in the counting of it is the fourth in our counting, but it's called Alif Lam Mim for us is not an ayah, but this doesn't matter for the meaning. It's just for the counting. Okay, let us see what were the fine points which these translations all miss. Let us go to first first with the word muflihun, the last word, which is translated as successful. Actually, falah, falaha and falaja in Arabic language meaning really cut and break. And from this root comes falah. Falah is the farmer, the one who cut, because the most significant apparent work of farmers is that they plow the earth, the plower, because by the plowing, you break the earth and make the ditch in it, and then you put the seeds and cover them. The plowing is an essential, the plow is essential tool of the fallahin, fallahun, the farmer. What does it mean, muflihun? Means essentially those who have cut through and break through the hardships and the tribulation of this universe and achieve that what they wished for, which is success and happiness and salvation. So it is the successful one, but it gives more taste, the one who have broken through to success, which indicate that getting to success is not an easy job, because the universe, that's a part of the Qadr issue, which we'll come to it, is fashioned, or this universe, this life is fashioned so that it is a testing universe. It's for testing and tribulation. And that requires some effort to cut through and break through. So those have cut and bred, those have broken through to that what they wish to achieve and became successful in this endeavor. So muflihun. So this muflihun is not just simply the successful, is more than that. Successful after an effort and breaking through. The one who broke through to success and happiness. So it's much stronger than just the successful. But you see, the translator did his best. For example, Pictal could have, but it would make the translation a little bit clumsy. Could, for example, have said, these are the successful. I would say these are who made a breakthrough and became successful. That will give more the meaning of falah. But still, they are the successful. It's good. It's good. But it is not, doesn't give the nuances of the word falah. Yeah, so that's one point. Second point, أُولَٰئِكَ عَلَى هُدًى مِّن رَبِّهِمْ. Those are literally on guidance from their Lord. On guidance, Hudan, from their Lord. Yeah. That you see how the people are now struggling in translation. Because some people understood that they are on guidance from the Lord, that they are complying with the revelation which has come down. When the guidance, you mean in the legislative sense, in the Sharia sense. Allah sent the guidance, and they are on that guidance. They are complying with that guidance. So it doesn't relate to an issue of Qadr, but they are on the guidance, which not any guidance detected by their own rational faculties. But it's actually the guidance which come from their Lord, which they have embraced and understood and enjoyed by using their rational faculty and their analysis, etc. No doubt about that. But it is not just let's say the achievement of mathematical theorem, for example. It is not the Pythagorean theorem. You detect the theorem, and then although you could say also it's guided from God, because that's the way your mind has been framed, that is capable of that, but it's not a part of revelation. So Huda here meaning the Sharia Huda, the guidance which come by revelation. So that's one point which seems to be observing. These are true guidance from their Lord, true guidance, the one coming. This is Yusuf Ali. Pictol said, these depend on the guidance from their Lord. Yeah. This translation is not clear if he means now the guidance in the meaning of Sharia, what has come in revelation, or the guidance meaning Allah guiding the people to embrace faith by whatever mechanism it is, which we have to discuss. So the Pictal translation does not make a clear, is it he mentioned the Huda in the sense of Sharia, the guidance which comes from Allah, like what he said about the messenger, when the kalitahdi ila salat mustaqim, you guide to the straight path. You give the straight path, explain to the people, and the people have to embrace it, have to walk on it. So addressing only the Sharia's part, offering the guidance. How the guidance happens, how it's related to the universe, how it relates to Qadr is not mentioned in this direction. But it could be meaning also, they are the one who are guided by their Lord in matter of Qadr and so on. And this will open some deep questions. And the Razi, as usual, because he loves these three theological and ilm al-kalam issues and philosophical, indulge in that to a considerable amount. And this will become also imminent when we come to Kafirin, when Allah says, Khatam, Allah sealed their hearts. Now this, we have get now in a real problem then. So there's no way to escape from the discussing the issue of Qadr. The issue of Qadr and Qadr has been confused. Initially, in the time of Sahaba, and even the early Tabi'in, the great Tabi'in, they were You read in literature that Al-Hasan al-Basri was accused to be Qadari, meaning the one who denied Qadr according to what Al-Hadith later called Qadr, or Bari Umayyah ibn Rukayt, which is essentially Jabr, which is really, there's no real human choice. And Bari Umayyah was propagating that, saying, it is a Qadr Allah, Allah has decided that we rule, so we are legitimately ruling. It couldn't be otherwise. That's the way they're trying to sell their oppressive rule, as it's unavoidable. Is that what Allah has decided? So nothing can be done about that. That's the political key why it was advocated Bani Umayyah and propagated very strongly. But the early scholars, early Tabi'in, like Hasan al-Basri, like Makhun and so on, they do not believe in that. They believe that there's a free human choice and so on. And they used to nickname them or insult them by calling them Al-Qadari. And there were long discussion, were they Qadari, were they not Qadari? We have checked all the history. We did not find that they are really Qadari, etc., trying to defend them. But if you go really in deep history and so on, they were Qadari in the correct sense, but they understood the meaning of Qadr. The meaning of Qadr is explained in various hadith and with some Sahaba. What is the Qadr khayri wa sharri? It's meaning that whatever good and evil in the universe is created by Allah. There is no secondary. That's what we discussed that in the Book of Tawheed also. There is no, I think it comes in the second volume, which will come soon, inshallah, before the end of the year. It's created by Allah. There is no second deity. There is no good God and bad God. There is no two brothers fighting each other. The good one is called Allah. The bad one is called Iblis. That's all. This whole dualist theory is false, which is false by rational conclusion, because it's impossible for another deity to exist, which is eternal and co-eternal with Allah Ta'ala, out of necessity of reason. But even if we assume the impossible, if they exist, then they would neutralize each other completely, if they are both eternal and necessarily existing. If one of them is created and so on by Allah, then it's impossible for the created being to challenge Allah and undermine his action. That's not possible. There's no way that it's conceivable. So ultimately, then Allah is the one who created the bad one or the devil, what they call devil or the bad God or something like that. And then the question arises, why did Allah create him? So originally, Qadr al-Khayri from Allah Ta'ala, Qadr, what is the system of the universe, whatever regarded as evil, even if it's not evil in itself, but whatever human regard as evil and bad, or against their interest and their well-being, which may be not necessarily evil in the universal scheme. But let's assume it's evil. For example, there are definitely evils, like, for example, people denying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala or insulting him. That's definitely evil, because Allah is not deserving to be insulted and denied. That's definitely evil. This could not have happened in the universe without Allah permitting it to happen. And he is the one who created the condition which made it possible to happen. And the Prophet summarized that in the hadith of Ibn Abbas, and also many Sahaba summarized it, Al-Qadr, Tu'min bil-Qadr, what is Iman bil-Qadr, and Tu'min annama asaba. This is the famous phrase of the, annama asaba kalam yakul yukhti'ak, wa ma akhta'ak kalam yakul. What has befallen you, that's all in the past, what has befallen you could not have been hit, had missed you, and what have missed you could not have will not befallen you. What does it mean? Mean what has happened in the past already. That's what happened, not in the future. It refers to that. What has happened already, if you like it or dislike it, could not have missed you. According to objective condition at that time, Allah permitted to happen, it could not have missed you. Does not mean that you don't study that and see what the condition possibly which have led to that situation, and you apply it in the future to avoid mishap. And the Quran direct to that, for example. And that's the reason it's important for this to take all the evidence of the Quran. If you stick to an ayah, you will end in misguidance. When Allah addressed the calamity in Uhud, other people say, what has happened to us? We are promised to be victorious against the disbelievers. See? And we have promised that we will defeat them. Allah says, yes, Allah promised you to defeat them. And the promise will be being fulfilled. But then you have disobeyed the messenger and disputed Aram Yusuf. We know what happens on the top of the mountain. The people, the arrow, the people who was supposed to protect the back of the Muslims with arrows and with arrows. Let's say the firing power, the artillery, which is supposed to protect our back so that the Quraysh could not come with horses and attack from the back. They could stop them from that if they will they will fight them with the intensively with arrows. And they were capable of doing that. But then when Quraysh started retreating and they were in defeat, the people in the mountains say, "Khalas, the battle is over. Let's go and collect booty." They wanted more. They were concerned about the booty more than about obeying the messenger. The messenger ordered them, "So you stay on the mountain, continue to do your job. Even if you see the bears eating us in pieces, don't come down. More than that, what you want of clear instruction." So they disobeyed the messenger. They disputed with the commander. The commander told them, "You stay here." The Prophet said, "You stay. You don't go. Don't worry about the booty." They don't bother. They worried about the booty and they went. And then Khalid ibn Walid noticed that the mountain is now, the back protection is not there, and turned around, and the success turned in the field. So from that we learn that you cannot dispute with the commanders. You should not change the battle order until the commander decides according to the... Then if you do that, you lose. But that what has happened, as Allah said in the Quran, bi-idhnillah, Allah permitted to happen for reasons. He mentioned some of it in the Quran, and some reason is not mentioned, and some reason are narrated by other stories, which are quite complex. Just at this day, Allah took this opportunity to take 70 shaheed as a punishment for that, what they did in Badr. But this is addressed in the Book of Tawheed, in the Arabic version, in an appendix called, they have been punished for that, what they did at Badr. I'm not sure if that has been translated in the volume one. I think the translator decided this is too technical, it doesn't fit the Book of Tawheed. I'm not sure. Maybe we have to review it. Anyway, so that has happened. It could not have not happened. It has happened. You learn from it for the future. It does not mean you don't study it, but don't go into a lamentation. It should not go into a lamentation and a never-ending funeral procession. No. You overcome that, you study it, apply it for the future. As the Quran instructs you to do. You have disputed between yourself and you want a dunya instead of obeying the messenger, so you got that. In the future, you have to avoid that. You have to learn that. But there's no sense in lamenting and indulging in never-ending obituaries. No, that's no sense. The same with what you have gotten, it could not have missed you because the objective condition will like that, and Allah permitted it to happen. There's no way anything in the universe will happen without Allah's permission. That's the meaning of Qadr. That's the meaning of Qadr. It does not mean that this has been decided before the beginning of time, for the creation, or being written there. Because the hadith of Qadr, which has been written at the beginning, before the creation of the heavens and earth, is al-maqadir. That's the correct wording. Al-maqadir is the proportion and the system of the universe. And what is contingent, what's possible, what's not possible. That this event will happen or not happen is not written. What's written is the system. And as the time develops, as the beginning of the creation, the time started. So when we read the book of what's his name, the one who died recently, a brief history of time. Time has a history, and the time, the absolute time of the universe, is initiated by Allah. Even the Prophet said, "Allah is the time, or the aeons, or the dahr." What's the meaning of Allah's dar? يُقَلِّبُ اللَّيْلَ وَنَهَارَ. I'm saying day and night. He does the events of the universe. So the events of the universe are Allah's action, and he's the one in control of that. And whatever happens in time. So definitely time is progressing, but time and the events as you go are the complete control and the mastery of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But it's not that these events have been decided at that time, or the specific events, what has happened at that time. No. It was decided at the moment based on the objective conditions, and the decision was with Allah's permission. The defeat of Uhud. If they did not dispute, this is obviously an imaginary construct. because they did dispute that the Sahaba had gone. But if they don't have disputed and they obeyed the messenger, they would have not been defeated and they don't have suffered these losses. That's if then else, that's all. That's just an imaginary construct. And until the moment of the battle, it was still open. And the decision was made there when they disputed. Allah allowed them to dispute and allowed the Quraysh to overcome them and allowed them to lose 70 shaheed. That's all by Allah. Allah allowed. It will be not correct to say that has been already known and decided before the creation of the universe or at the creation of it. That's not correct. But the qadr, the system of the universe, so that this may develop and happen, is decided there. This will settle many of the questions of in the Quran, and it fits with the. But since most mutakallimeen later got stuck in a so-called theory that such event or changes of events cannot happen in the divine being, because an eternal being cannot have events in himself, which is an assumption which has no evidence of that. All evidence of the Quran or evidences of logic, because there's no rational condition saying that an entity which does action must be necessarily itself an action. Not necessarily. There's no necessity and no proof for that. As a matter of fact, Allah is definitely acting by absolute freedom and spontaneity. So that does not negate that He is necessarily existing. He is necessarily existing is either non-acting at all, like the Aristotle's God who doesn't act, and the universe just the action is all in the universe in an attempt to become like the divine. And this theory is obviously internally contradictory, has been deserted by philosophers long ago and refuted. And the other one is that the eternally existing universe is acting by necessity. And this acting by necessity contradicts the nature of the universe, because it cannot explain the Big Bang, or it cannot explain the free choice of initial parameters. Besides, it maybe contradicts the issues of necessity of reason, but this needs further elaboration. There may be possibility just from the concept of necessarily existing, that the necessarily existing cannot be acting by necessity or by without choice, cannot be deaf, blind, and dead. That contradicts the meaning of necessarily existing. But in the elaboration of such an evidence of divine proof, which will be like a further development of the so-called ontological proof of St. Anselm, has not been elaborated until now in a convincing way yet. Maybe someone will be able to elaborate and develop further. And the other one, a necessarily existing being can act with absolute freedom. Then he can act spontaneously with absolute freedom. And this is exactly the only explanation of the universe, that it is created by a being which acts with absolute freedom and chooses the initial parameters arbitrarily as he wishes according to his intention, what he wants to do. That's by necessity. There is no other options. Either no action at all, and this has been refuted. This is not enough for the universe to work and develop according to this means. The universe exists eternally, and the God exists, which is inactive. It's just an ideal, and the universe is developing toward that ideal. This is nonsense, and it contradicts the principle that the necessarily existing beings cannot be two. It's only one. One must exist, but multiple cannot exist. So it's only one. So this one cannot be these two things. The same apply for the acting by necessity. At least it contradicts the current state of the universe and that the initial parameters have been chosen freely. So a nature, a dead, blind nature, which cannot choose, cannot initiate the universe. That's not possible. So that's not possible based on the cosmological evidence, not on intrinsic analysis of the concept. But it may be possible to establish it by intrinsic, and then we have an absolute proof which doesn't depend upon a Big Bang or anything in the universe. And I think it can be developed. It seems to be possible that it will be by deep analysis of the concept of action and so on. That's one. And secondly, an agent which acts by freedom and by choice, and it must be done by absolute freedom. Necessarily, it's not possible to have it acting sometimes disadvantaged by the concept of necessarily existing, and thus dictate that essentially this being made the decision to start time, start day and night, start all the development of the universe, and this means that the future is, he may have a qadr, a system established. But within that system, the future is still open. Developments can be going very this way or this way. Whatever the development in the future is completely under his control. He knows what possibilities at every moment. He knows at the beginning of the eternity, he knows what universes are possible, and he chose one of them. Why? That's another issue. But that's his qadr. This is his choice. You have to accept it, not accept it. You want to depart the universe, to commit suicide, it's not going to change anything. It is the choice has been done, you have to accept it. That's al-qadr khairi wa shari min ta'ala. Secondly, at every moment of time, he is fully aware what the possibilities next moment, and next days, and next months, and next years, if they're still, and he permits whatever to happen, and he can enter and prevent a certain development from happening, which would have happened otherwise. He has the complete control of the universe. Nothing happens without his permission. So he has the complete dominance of the universe, and all what's happening is with his permission. So there's no qada in the sense that's all. If you, for example, make a decision on inshallah, when the pandemic is over, I will collect money and so on. Next year, I will go for Hajj. Hajj will be available, and then you indeed perform Hajj. It does not mean that this has been known or decided, but the possibility was there. And known to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with the universe, there will be people who will be performing Hajj and so on. Who will be performing? What's the time? This will be decided on time. And otherwise, you will have the really contradictions in the Quran, in necessity of reading the Quran. Also, the Quran refuted that, for example, when Allah says about it, they say this means that divine knowledge changes. He knew something will happen in the future. When it happens, he knows that it happened. They say the knowledge just changed in that. No, there is a change, there's differently. When the Quran said this clearly, when he mentioned the comprehensiveness of Allah, he said, وَمَا تَسْقُطُ مِنْ وَرَقَةٍ إِلَّا يَعْلَمُهَا. If a leaf of tree falls, whatever a leaf of a tree falls, then he knows. One knows what? Knows that it has fallen. Not before that he knew that it will fall. He knew that it will fall. But when it falls, he knows that it has fallen now. So it's in the past. The past has happened. So based on that, the absolute time, which has not necessarily the exact physical time which we have on Earth for issues with the measurements and so on, but the absolute time of the universe is essentially an expression of Allah's action. And this has also an implication that any theory which does not have an absolute time, like for example the theory of relativity, cannot be really a complete description. It's just from logical reason. Look at the theory of relativity. Say the time is relative. Relative to what? They say to an inertial system. What's the inertial system say? It's somehow fixed in the remote stars. So it's relative to something else. There cannot be absolute relativity. There's nothing can be relative to nothing, to relative to relative. It must end somehow to an absolute. So the current theory of relativity is a description for phenomena on the Earth, maybe good description, but it cannot describe the whole universe completely. While the theory of quantum theory, with its absolute time, there's an absolute time quantum theory, is more close to that, and that's the reason it is the more correct theory. And in any competition between the theories in certain situation, it has been proven now, even experimentally, observationally, not experimentally, that the conclusion of an absolute relativity a la gravitation theory has been refuted by certain observation. It's not sufficient. Besides, it's not sufficient in itself to generate the initial parameters. But independent of that, it's not sufficient to describe certain phenomena, extreme phenomena in quasars and so on. While this quantum theory has passed this. So there must be some kind of universal time. There may be a problem for physics to connect the universal time with our local times and so on. This is an issue which had been done by, can be settled by measurements and by recourse to issues of this type, of scientific type. But there's an absolute time in the universe. And this absolute time is just an expression of the divine, as the Prophet said, the humans hurt me by saying, Ya Khaybat Adar, what a miserable time. Woe on the time, cares the time, cares these days, and I am the time, and ad-dahr, the eons. Didn't use the word time, zaman, and ad-dahr, the eon, and ad-dahr. Uqallib al-layla wal-nahar. He explained what's the meaning of and ad-dahr, I am the time, I am the one turning a day and light. Giving an example of how the expression of the action in the universe. Because people usually connect the passage of time with day and night, but it's not necessarily by any activity of Allah in the universe, even by frequencies around the atom. That's also a measure of time. He's the one controlling and attaining it. The one who set it, to start with in a certain system, that's Qadr, and it's running accordingly until the end of the world or for eternities according to the system. And in a moment, it's still under divine control. He can change it, he can twist it, he can bring it forward, bring it backward. And he does sometimes in supernatural way as evidence of his prophets and so on. But this is another secondary issue because it's under his control. So the naturalistic point of view, this is impossible. This miracles are impossible because the natural law cannot be broken. It's based on the fact that nature is necessarily existing. Well, we have refuted that by the Big Bang, and I've refuted that by all of these things. This is refuted. This is finished and gone. This is not possible. So nature is not necessarily existing. It's contingent. It's under Allah's control. Yes, he fixed it at the beginning of it in a certain way, but in the future he can undermine it and reverse it in certain situation. Perfectly, without any. There's no power above him preventing him from doing that if he wants. And sometimes he does it, sometimes he doesn't know, doesn't want. That's depending upon his will and depending on the objective condition of the time as he decides and perceives, not as we wish and imagine. So that's how to understand really the passage of time and the events in the universe, which fits with the Quran consistently everywhere. So all these other theories will not fit to the Quran. They rely on either a bit of ayah or a bit of statement or an imaginary statement like whatever has events in himself is by himself is an event or created, not eternal. That's not true. This can't be. Because if you divide the necessary existing being either one who is not acting at all, which cannot exist, because the universe is action, so it can't be. So the universe must be another. And the universe, since for Aristotle, what he called God is just a mover, the one who moves everything, but doesn't move himself. This one cannot exist with an eternal universe. What cannot exist? Because two necessarily separate beings cannot exist by necessity of reason. And the proof for that is the Book of Tawheed, for example. And the philosophers have finished that long ago and abandoned that point of view. A second one is that necessarily existing being who acts by necessity will not, at least at this level of our knowledge, will not synchronize with the universe, because the universe has to be based on the choice of a chooser. So what they call nature or matter and so on, which is acting by necessity, just by internal laws, without having a mind or a will or the intention or anything like that, is impossible to explain the universe. But it may be impossible in itself based on analysis of the concept of action. That will be an intriguing area where people who are working the ontological proof of God may develop, should go and start developing. In addition to the attempts have been made, and we have the attempt of Saint Anselm, we have attempt of Gödel, the famous mathematician, and the one who has the famous Gödel theorem about incompleteness of the number theory and all these things. This is the ingenious man. He has also an ontological proof which seems to be quite solid, but there may be still objection about some points of it. But this is very technical. And the third one is a necessarily existing being which is absolutely free and spontaneous. Absolutely free. There's impossible for to be any condition dictating to him to do or not to do. He could have chosen to this universe, another universe. He could have chosen not to create or to create. That's absolutely free. There's nothing which compel him to do either one of them. He's not under compulsion. He's absolutely free. That's the one. That will fit then with the theory of Qadr, as we explained, and fit with the Quran properly, and does not fit with these claims of those who claim that Allah knew that XY will choose to go to Hajj in that year. No, before the creation of the earth. No, it's not. Allah knew there will be possibilities, and there will be maybe a possible person called Muhammad al-Mas'ari, and he, in due course, this what materializes this way and not materialize the other way. And one of the strongest points which support that is not only that the knowledge changes as we will come to that, but one of the strongest thing, points which may enforce that is the ayah about those who did not join the battle to going to Tabuk in Surah At-Tawbah, and they don't have any excuse. And the Prophet said, wait, don't cohabit with your wife, etc., until Allah decides. And they did not lie. They did not choose to lie. And Allah said, وَأَخَرُونَ مُرْجَوْنَ لِأَمْرِ اللَّهِ. And others are postponed, because he mentioned the Muhalsabiqun Awalun and Allah's grace on them and bestowings on them, and Yusha the Munafiqeen and condemned them to the hellfire, and mentioned various categories, say, Wa akharuna murjawna li amrillah. And others, they are postponed to the decision, to the command of Allah. Imma yatubu alayhim wa imma yu'adhibhum. Either he will punish them or he forgive them. So, definitely at the moment with the relation, when the ayah, this way came, the decision was not made, because he murjawna li amrillah, postponed to the decision of Allah. He has the choice either to forgive them. Wallahu azizul hakim. Allah is exalted and wise. That's it. What will be the decision? Will be later, not now. Later the decision came. So at the moment of revelation, definitely the decision was not made. Otherwise Allah will be lying, say they are postponed to the decision of Allah. Decision of Allah has not been made yet. By the way, most scholars, when except my non-favorite Al-Qurtubi, he mentioned this point. He's the only one mentioned that he's a relation of Qadr. Say, it's actually to human vision. From a human point of view, it is there. But that's actually because he is Jabari. He's like Ash'ari, more or less, believing that all of these things have been decided for the creation of the universe. So he got stuck there. So he said, this is from human vision. From Allah's vision is different. But what Allah is telling us from his own vision, what he is doing, these are postponed to my command. So the command has not been made. The decision has not been made. It cannot be known before even that at the moment, is not known what the decision will be, because the decision has not been made yet. If it is known, then the decision is already, Allah Ta'ala, there's no way. If I know that I will decide this way, then he will not be able to postpone to Amrillah. No. I have already decided. I know that it will be like, I have no choice. If you say that Allah has already knew that he will forgive them, for example, or punish them, then there's nothing to be commanded. It will happen. Allah becomes under compulsion, unable to change his knowledge. Otherwise, his knowledge will be wrong. So this will create infinite contradiction. Al-Qurtubi tried to escape from that by saying, this is from a human vision point of view, not from Allah's point of view. This escape is not possible, because Allah is talking about himself, and he's the one who is revealing. And also, even if we accept Al-Qurtubi at face value, expand us to say how it is from your view, it will be like that. From Allah's view, it will be like that. It's impossible. There's no way to explain. Read it again and again. But he's the only scholar, even Al-Razi, when he came to that, just mentioned that there are people who have been postponed and that they were forgiven later and so on, without mentioning the issue later. Although he discussed, maybe he did not want to go into this nightmare, because he discussed the issue of Qadr alias plenty, and then was wavering in certain issues, and some places he stopped and advanced a little bit and went back, walls, etc. And did not want to indulge further in this problem anymore, possibly, because he indulged in that quite often. And in many places, he hints that there are problems, but says, we say what our scholars say. In some places, he escaped by joining just the majority and the public and the jumhur. Obviously, he did not have the courage to pronounce something which is... But he has, I think, the mental capability and the sophistication to in some places to deviate from that, at least in portions. I feel that he did not have the courage to put things upside down, because that was so deep entrenched after several centuries of Ash'ari developments and Ilm al-Kalam development. But in some places, he, for example, in measure of the divine knowledge that it changed, say Abu Hussein al-Basri. Abu Hussein al-Basri is a Mu'tazili. Abu Hussein al-Basri said, no, actually the divine knowledge knows. Allah knows before the leaf falls that it will fall, and after it has fallen, it knows. So the knowledge can change, and there's the contradiction that Allah is eternal. So there's even Mu'tazili who recognize that the divine action could be new or created or something like that, but does not negate that Allah is in himself, in his being, eternal and necessarily existing. So you see, this is a bit of a deep point, but if we go to Huda, even if say Huda meaning guidance for Allah in the creative sense, not in the legislative sense, not that what he has revealed, but in creative sense, then we have to interpret it this way. The guidance here meaning is that, if you mean in the creative sense, that they would not have been guided because Allah has guided them, meaning the system of the events have been set like this, and the choice of the events have been set, that everyone, human being, has the choice, and has enough capability and enough mental capability and enough genuinely free will, so he can choose the guidance. And this would have not been the case if Allah did not allow to be like that. It's by originally creating a reverse this way, and by allowing this to happen, this situation this way. Which is correct, that's correct. But who accepted the guidance and advanced on the way of guidance? The one who is guided by himself. Allah did not force him, but Allah allowed it to happen according to his own arc. And this is clear in this we are talking about Medina now. This ayah is Madani, early Medina, second year, third year, first year around that time. Already in Mecca, the issue is very clear. For example, in Walayli Ida Yaqsha, Isra'u Tal-Layl, Walayli Wanda Hariya Tajjala Ma Khalaqa Dhakar, Inna Sa'ib Musa, Fa'amma Man A'ta Wa Taqa, who has given from his money, Wa Taqa, became aware of Allah, Fasul Yastirhu Al-Yusra, he is the one who is giving, Hanjul, Wa Ambakhila Wa Staghana, Fasul Yastirhu Al-Yusra. And then they said, Van Sha'a Falimun, Sha'a Falimun, who wishes to believe, can believe, who wishes does not to believe, can believe. Allah gave that freedom and guaranteed it by we did not compel anyone to accept or reject. So that's all the issues of Qadr. There are various ahadith who seem to be contradicting that, but these ahadith are faulty and contradictory. I have collected all of those and discussed them and expanded on them. The most famous one is the one which is usually quoted often, like I said, that after 40, the famous hadith of Sadiq al-Masduq. An angel comes in the womb and say, my Lord, is it? And you see from the matin, it's impossible. After 40, most likely it's also a mistake, which shows you that hadith is faulty, the wording of the hadith. Code. Another hadith is after 40 or 41 or 42. So the narrator did not memorize probably this portion. But anyway, and then he says, my Lord, command me, is it a dhakar or unta? This is the first one which you should object to, because dhakar unta has been already decided before the moment of fertilization. We know that by necessity. So dhakar unta is decided before. So how can you say dhakar unta? It's already decided, already done, already gone. Which shows that this hadith is faulty. This hadith, famous hadith in Bukhari, hadith al-Sadiq al-Masduq, attributed allegedly to Abdullah al-Mas'ud. It's contradicts to Abdullah al-Mas'ud vision about qadr. So most likely this is by mistake by Zayd ibn Wahab. The only one narrating Abdullah al-Mas'ud is Zayd ibn Wahab. And this shows that Zayd ibn Wahab is not reliable in this report. And based on that, we should be questioned all his other reports and scrutinize them more thoroughly. And I did that in many other research. Everywhere where we have narration from Abdullah al-Mas'ud, from various followers and students, I will mention Zayd ibn Wahab at the end to say, but Zayd ibn Wahab is not that reliable in his memory because of this hadith. So that hadith gave us a hint. But Bukhari was fooled by that hadith. And people think this is decided in the womb. And one of the questions is, what is his age? What's his life? No, we could say, okay, this is related to his genetic predisposition and so on. But even that does not fix the age 100%. Even your genetic disposition give you an age, let's say, of 100 years. If you live a certain healthy life, but if you don't live a healthy life, it may be shortened. And also it contradicts the hadith, I said, whoever wants to life it to extend, and his children be blessed, he should be keep good relation with the relation of the womb. He should be kind to his next of kin. So you can change your life. You can change your ajal. So this is all based on this hadith. Is all based on, and then we have maybe read also the books of Hizb and others that the ajal is fixed and only the end of ajal is. But the ajal actually is not fixed. Ajal is dynamical, all with the permission of Allah Subhanahu wa Taala, under complete control of Himself. And I mentioned also once in an occasion, I don't know, was it here in Tafsir or elsewhere, that we have also an interesting story in the Old Testament. Although it's not an authority because we don't know how accurately it's written and so on. But one of the kings of Israel was informed by a prophet, get ready, your life is ending. So he supplicated to Allah Ta'ala and Allah granted him 15 more years. This is the Old Testament. And that's the reason many of the Western scholars say, This the issue, the old theory of Qadr, that everything is fixed and known before the creation of the universe, is not correct. Or this cannot be correct according to Quran also, and according to what we mentioned about these three who had these have been postponed and left to the decision of Allah to punish them or forgive them. We know at the end he gave them, but at the time of the revelation, it was not decided yet. So this hadith is faulty. You should not. And it says Shaqi or Sa'id. It's not true. It's not decided there. It's decided later by his own action. At least we say that it's meaning, what's the probability and so on? What's the feature? What's the feature? Shaqi or Sa'id? He has all the features to be Shaqi, all the features to be Sa'id. That's it. And if he's mentally deficient, for example, like Mongols or Dao syndrome, they are not responsible. So they are Sa'id. We can say, assume they are Sa'id. They are excluded from this test anyway. So this is all. These hadith and so on are faulty. But what shows that they are so faulty, that there are other hadith which are better. It's not. For example, let me mention that before closing today. Yeah. There's a hadith, very good, excellent. It's not from Abu Huraira, said, in explanation of Qawlu Ta'ala, الذين يرثون الفردوس هم فيها خالدون. So explain what does mean those who inherited the paradise. He say, a man doing good deeds. So as long as he is making good deeds, places allocated in paradise for him and building are made for him. But then this one deviates and dies a kafir by his own choice. So these buildings in paradise will be kept and given to someone else who inherits it. And he mentioned the case of the hellfire. And the one works the action of hellfire, so his location and housing in the hellfire is allocated for him. But he embraced Islam and become good before dying. Then his housing and place in the hellfire will be destroyed because nobody can inherit that. Then he enters paradise. Maybe he inherits from those who apostatized before their death. Besides what he has built for himself, for example. If he got the opportunity to build, usually you get with the Shahada, you build already a basic house there with Iman. And if you get more time to do more good deeds, then you build more. And then you inherit maybe from other people. So this hadith also in Bukhari is much better in Isnad than the hadith of Zayd ibn Wahab. Have you ever heard this hadith? And you're mentioning no. Because all are stuck in this imaginary theory of things, everything has been decided at the beginning of the universe because they misunderstood the hadith of Maqadir. What has been decided is Maqadir, and this is the correct wording which is narrated by Muslim. And they narrated with various versions. He wrote everything, what will happen, what will not happen. He wrote all events, he wrote all this, but the best and most reliable wording is كَتَوَ مَقَادِيرُ كُلُّ شَيْءٍ. He wrote the Maqadir, the proportion, the system of everything. He decided the system of the universe. That's what has been decided. Not what will happen, that's open. That's developing dynamically. Some of it depending upon physical conditions, some of it depending upon action, some of it action of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who may decide later to do or not to do. One of them is these three who have been forgiven later, but at the moment of the revelation, they were postponed. They were postponed. No decision was made. And Allah says clearly, مُرْجَوْنَ لِأَمْرِ اللَّهِ. They are postponed to the decision of Allah. So the decision of Allah could not have happened at that moment and could not have been known by necessity at that moment. But the possibilities are there. إِمَّا يَتُوبُ عَلَيْهِمْ يَعَدِّمُ. These possibilities are there. Yeah, it's known that there's possibility. That's all. That's meaning the future is open, is not closed. That's an open future theory of qadha. The future is open. The past is gone and done, finished, closed. You don't mock your lamentation, but does not prevent you from studying the past. Why did this happen? What were the conditions there? Could we change the condition for the future to benefit from the future? Yes, that's perfectly. And that's what the guidance in Surah Ali Imran, saying the catastrophe of Ahad, clearly says, you have disputed under yourself and disobeyed your commander, the messenger, and wanted dunya, you wanted booty. Instead of waiting, and the booty will be distributed. Don't worry, everyone will get his share of booty if there's any booty. And they ended with that calamity, no booty and loss of 70 lives. Clearly, if there's an instruction, when Allah mentioned this, he said, avoid in the future to do the same mistake. Otherwise, the same will happen. But what has happened, khalas, gone. Forget about it now. Look forward. Learn from it, look forward. Don't open a lamentation. Or we say in Arabic, latmiya, slap yourself and weep and cry forever. No, it's gone, khalas. If any, then study what are the objects of condition, what was the mistake, how we can improve it for the future. It is okay also to say, if we have done that, it would have been like that. This is okay. This is an if then else. That's clear. This is the Quran is using. Allah was fulfilling his promise to you. You were succeeding, but then you disputed. You did not obey. And then you got a calamity. Meaning, if you have not done that, it wouldn't have been like that. But you did it, so don't do it in the future. But don't indulge. And they say it clearly. It doesn't happen against Allah. Allah was not defeated. He was completely sovereign. He could have stepped in with a miracle and preventing that. But he did not step. To give you a lesson. Or to adopt shuhada from you. Whatever the reason he has. Not to stepping. And even it came to the extreme that the Prophet almost was killed, injured, and there was a rumor that he was killed. That was also a good opportunity to teach the people. I said, Muhammad is just a messenger like any messenger. If he dies or get killed, are you going to turn away from the revelation? He's a messenger like any other messenger. All of them came and died and went. Is that an excuse to turn away from them and apostatize? No, that's not an excuse. We should continue on the same path. The messenger have a limited life. He's going to die. But even if he was murtied today, obviously Allah will not allow him to be murtied there, because still the message has to be completed. It was not completed yet. It will be completed in the future and protected him, whatever kind of protection he did specifically for him. Otherwise, he would have been killed. Situation became dire. So if we study that carefully, we and discount all these theories about Qadr and all these nonsense that Allah, that the knowledge of Allah cannot change, but it does change. You know, it's change in the sense that something which is going to happen with certainty, Allah knows it will going to happen. When it happens, Allah knows it has happened. It's happening now. And when it has completed, Allah knows it has been completed. That's the correct one, which covers all. So you see, this point of Alahudam Rabbihim doesn't mean Allah. The first explanation is simple. It doesn't omit the issue of Qadr. They are in the guidance as revealed by the Lord. That's the guidance which is given through the prophets. They combined with it and they are on it. They are on the path, on that path which has been revealed. It's not only just, but if it means they are guided by the Lord and He created the guidance and the right condition of guidance, indeed, in the sense of Qadr, as we have explained. Not in the sense of Qadr of Ash'ari, who is essentially Jabr, which is really compulsion, it's ending Jabr. If all that is known, that this guy will embrace Islam, this guy will not embrace Islam, if it's known before the creation, then it is then it is impossible for all of this to be true, and that you have the never-ending contradiction, and the choice does not make any sense, and even Allah become bound by his own previous knowledge and become then acting by necessity, and this contradicts the fact that he's a free agent, absolutely free and sovereign. And this is the most fundamental aspect of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's the one which explained the universe coming into existence, that he's absolutely free. He cannot be bound by anything, not even by his own knowledge. So the knowledge follow that. And the knowledge is part of Qudra. He's capable of knowledge. That is part of Qudra. And not something separate, not something by itself. He is capable of knowing what's going on, what has from the past already known, and to what. And in eternity, before creation, he knew what are the possible universes there. And he made the choice. That choice, you have to accept it. There's no escape. That's intrinsically because he... And that choice is wise from his point of view. And wise according to the feature that he is a necessarily existing perfect being. So that choice is good. But it's in a choice. That's his choice. Good or bad, that's his... You classify is his choice. That's the you have to accept it. There's no escape from it. There's no way you can exit the universe and no way you can change that choice. So you have to accept the Qadr Khair bin Allah Ta'ala. That's Allah. And you have to be pleased with that and you have to live within that. The other alternative is what to do? Commit suicide? Okay, go ahead, commit suicide. But some atheists say we have a better alternative. No, you don't have a better alternative. You have a nature or a matter working and interacting by necessity, and it working like a vicious machine from eternity to eternity. You like it, you don't like it, the universe as it is because of this alleged matter doing that by necessity. You cannot change anything like that. If you don't like it, commit suicide also. Nothing will. So even the atheists have a qadr, which they cannot escape. Even if they fool themselves, no, they can't escape. And when they claim they can escape, they can't change, then they attribute to themselves an ability, a will, which is not warranted by the system of the universe. It's just that will, your will, your alleged will is most likely an internal delusion. There's no guarantee that this will is a free will. How come that you have free will and the whole universe is mechanical? This is not very convincing. But Allah is creating the universe, giving you these features, guarantee that the will is genuinely a genuine will, and it's and you have a free will. So Allah's freedom is the one who guarantees your freedom. That's the free agent is to guarantee that your freedom is genuine, and he's capable of creating a universe in which you have a genuine free will, a genuine capability of action, and a genuine responsibility. And that's what the situation is. And this Quran indicated, everywhere it indicates. Anything else, all these theory about the claiming that any the other statement might undermine Allah knowledge. No, it doesn't undermine knowledge. It undermines all your knowledge about Allah knowledge. Your knowledge of Allah knowledge is wrong, mistaken. It's not a correct one. The correct one is what the Quran says clearly. The Quran express. And the necessity of reason dictates clearly. Otherwise, what's the meaning of saying Allah is a free agent? He could have created or not created. If he must have created that and he's acting by necessity, there's no reason. If he is acting by necessity, there is no reason to say he's a conscious being, he's a free agent, he has will, he has knowledge. Because nature is dead, acting by necessity, there is no need to postulate any knowledge for nature. There's nothing in the nature indicate that they have any kind of intrinsic knowledge. It's just a mechanism working. If you look at it at a mechanical point of view, like the atheists will look. And any being which seems to have a free will, it's just a delusion. You are deluded. Actually, you don't have a genuine free will. But you delude yourself that you agree with you. That's it. There's no evidence, no compelling evidence that in an atheist frame that a human free will is a genuine free will. You could have chosen this or could chosen otherwise. No. You could not have it. It just appeared to you like that because you are deluded. So the atheists also have the so if what's his name, the guy who said wrote the God Delusion, I don't remember his name now at the moment. He has also his writing is actually he's deluded to think he could have written otherwise. No, you could not have it. It's nature dictating to you, and this is just so you are also deluded. Your delusion is based on delusion. It causes a never-ending delusion. So we cannot rely on anything. But the only way really to rely on that what we know and that we have a free will is sufficiently, we are sufficiently able to make a decision and otherwise decide otherwise is based on that Allah created and was capable with this capability for certain beings and gave them this capability. That's the only guarantee for that. And he has this absolute capability of freedom. That's the only way. But it's just a summary. I'm writing something, inshallah, collecting all the hadith. I would say the hadith about Qadr and so on, narration are mostly faulty and do not stand in scrutiny. And the ayat are very clear, they are contradicting that. And the necessity of reason is dictating the otherwise. So all of that, I think, is should be regarded as considerably well-established and settled. And we can forego about the claim of the Ash'ari and all these things. That's all. Does not stand any rational or any Quranic scrutiny. Okay, I think this is enough for today. We will see if there's any questions. And you see that's done where did the Quran open doors, but we took guidance from other places of the Quran and also the necessities of reason and the analysis of the concepts and the meaning of concepts. Okay, so we stop here for today. And it's almost certain that next week we'll have no halaqa because we'll be visiting myself and Shahzad, visiting someone in Sheffield. So next Sunday, no halaqa, and the halaqa will be after that, will be 2 or 3 days after Eid al-Adha, bi-idhnillah. Yeah.
Okay, JazakAllah khair, Sheikh. No questions have come through.
Yeah. Inshallah, we'll try to get all of these things in one treatise, which I think will be... I think will be crucial. We'll get all of these things. But in Islamic history, by the way, there have been also people discussing that and bringing convincing arguments against the Ash'ari and against the Ahl al-Hadith. And And there have been in between positions, like Ibn Taymiyyah, he talks about taqdir, which is again a mistake. Taqdir al-kawni at the beginning, and the taqdir yearly, taqdir in Laylat al-Qadr, and taqdir at birth, and taqdir monthly, and things like that, trying to escape that. Actually, taqdir is only the one taqdir which has happened, because he confused taqdir with qada again. Taqdir is only the one at the beginning of the universe. The system has been chosen and let go then with the initial conditions. After that, it is no new taqdir in the sense. The taqdir is already done. System is already in place. It's only the action of Allah, the action of free agents, and with everything that Allah control. So this is to be qada. There may be qada. Yes, there could be qada. For example, Allah may make a qada in Ramadan, for example, that someone will die during the year for whatever reason. That's it. Although he could have possibly not died, but Allah decided that he will die for whatever reason. For example, there will be fitna coming, and this is a good worshipper, and this worshipper is weak in certain aspect. If the fitna will come, which is coming inevitably because of certain constellation of the international relation, the local relation, and so on, if it comes, he may waver. So Allah, out of mercy, decided that he should die before that, and die in that's within Allah's capability. But it's not known before the beginning of the universe. No. It is open. It's one of the contingency which is inherent in the classical universe and things like that. So that also has to be like the hadith about that qadar, taqdir, what happens. Like when Abbas says that in Ramadan or in the mid-Sha'ban, a man is marrying and so on. He doesn't know that he will not reach this next month. He's already decided that he will die in Ramadan. It may happen. It may be like that. It may be very well. For what reason Allah has had. That's what we and it's very easy to do that for us. It doesn't need even to do it miraculously. Just daily, we have every second we have millions of, maybe not millions, this may be millions of cancer cells emerging in the body and the immune system getting rid of them. All what Allah needs is just to let one of these get away without being handled by the immune system. It develops into a cancer and you are gone before next year. If Allah has decided that for some reason, sometimes as a mercy for you. For the one who is dying, it doesn't appear like a mercy, but because he doesn't know. But it could be like that. It could be very well like that. Yeah. So that's what the all of these things are within Allah controls. And he decided not only in Ramadan, not only in mid-Sha'ban, according to some hadith, not only in the womb. Every time, every moment, he can make decision for the coming phase of. Let things go, prevent things from happening, step in with something. For example, this pandemic, it could have emerged, could not have emerged. Maybe the first one infected, Allah decided, let him go and let it become a pandemic for certain reason in the universe. Allah could have stepped and prevented that. Like many other people have been infected than this. It's not arbitrary. It's with Allah knowledge and permission. That's important, is with Allah knowledge and permission. It's not arbitrary, it's just someone who infected just by accident. That will fit in an atheist universe, but not in our vision of the universe. And so on and so on. Anyway, that's need really a complete treatise in which all these hadith which have spoiled the people's mind are classified as weak and analyzed and refuted. Then the ayahs are synchronized and the necessities of reason based on the fundamental, well-established the attributes of the divine and the attributes which is the most important, that he is a free agent. That's the fundamental, that he is a God, free agent. He's not a dead nature. He's not acting by necessity like a dead matter of nature, which is impossible because that cannot explain the universe and maybe it's impossible in itself. Future analysis may show he is absolutely free, sovereign agent. Does whatever he wants, the way he wants. And no power can compel him to anything, and no power can undermine his action. And that's the meaning, the correct meaning of qada and qadar, really. Okay. So, and as I said, tomorrow, because of the brothers who are listening, because I have to go for the yearly glaucoma check. I received the message by phone, because the original date was cancelled because of the pandemic. So most likely I will have blood vision tomorrow. So we'll do the question answer maybe a week after. Yeah, next Monday is better. Then I can add more things because this issue of yearly da'wah in Mecca is really a nightmare. There's so many fabrications and weak stories and contradictory stories. It needs really further sieving. I did sieve some of it, but still, I think I can add more sieving if we have it. Not tomorrow, next Monday, inshallah. Monday after, in 8 days.
Inshallah.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.